Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Beverly Bass is a fourth-generation Floridian from Fort Myers, and as one of the first female pilots for American Airlines and its first female captain, her life makes for a great story. But it's her experience as a pilot on September 11th in 2001 when she and 6,000 others found themselves grounded in the village of Gander, Newfoundland. That story is now being told through a musical on stages across the world. Let's take a listen to the music from the play and get a taste of what this unique Canadian town is like.
Get from Disneyland.
Fish and chips and shipwrecks.
This is Newfoundland.
Welcome to the Rock.
Those planes and passengers stayed in Gander until American Airspace reopened. The show, Come From Away, premiered in San Diego in 2015, and it's now been performed on stages from Washington, D.C. to Toronto and now Broadway in New York City. Here to tell us about her life story and how portions of it have now been performed on stage is retired pilot and Fort Myers native Beverly Bass. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you today.
We're glad to have you. We are talking about the musical Come From Away and the real-life story of Fort Myers pilot Beverly Bass. Call in with your thoughts or comments at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So, Beverly Bass, the portions of your life told in the new play, Come From Away, are incredible. But before we get to the events of 9/11 and how that shaped your life and the story now told in the musical, I want to go back to the beginning. You were a pioneering female pilot and one of the first American Airlines ever hired. When did you know you wanted to be a pilot?
Well, I actually knew quite early on. I was about 8 years old when I told my parents that I wanted to be a pilot. And of course, they found that just shocking at the time. But I really never lost that interest. When I was 16, I begged to take flying lessons, but we were very involved in raising and training quarter horses, so my dad wanted to keep my interest in the horses and wouldn't let me take lessons. So when I left for college in 1970 to attend TCU in Fort Worth, it was actually my first summer home where I took my first flying lessons at Page Field in Fort Myers, Florida. My instructor was Eddie Wilson, and when I came down from that first lesson, I told my parents I would fly for the rest of my life.
But that just sealed the deal.
It did. It absolutely did.
And then what did it take to get from that first lesson to be hired by a major U.S. airline?
Well, that was a bit challenging because back in the early 70s, there really weren't any women airline pilots, so I didn't have anybody to talk to. I didn't have any mentors or anybody to guide me through the process. But what I did know is I had to build thousands of hours of flight time. And so I did that when I returned to college in Texas. And, of course, as most people know, and certainly in the play they know, my first flying job was flying for a Fort Worth mortician. In a tiny Bonanza, I only transported one body at a time, and I had to climb over their face to get to my seat, and I did that for $5 an hour.
Wow.
That was my start, and then, of course, I had many jobs after that, but it was challenging as a young female to get my flight experience, to even be in a position to apply to American. But once I got accepted, American treated me beautifully.
Well, Texas is a great place to be based. It's a huge state, and flying for a mortician for your first job, I mean, they talk about taking your lumps, but that's definitely taking a lump in the beginning. So when we were preparing for our show today, you said that the music from the show Come From Away kind of helps to tell your story. So I want us to listen to another major barrier that you broke as a female pilot.
1986, the first female American captain in history. Suddenly I'm in the cockpit. Suddenly I've got my wings. Suddenly all of those pilots protesting me. Well, they can get their own drinks.
So how long were you a pilot before you became the airline's first female captain?
I got hired by American in 1976, and one day short of my 10th anniversary, I checked out as captain.
What's the difference between a pilot and a captain?
Well, back in those days, the airplanes had flight engineers, so there were actually three pilots in the cockpit. So I started out as a flight engineer on the 727, and everything is based on seniority with the airlines. So you move up when it's your turn, basically, and then you move up to co-pilot or first officer. And then, of course, the ultimate dream is to be in the left seat and fly captain. So that's what everybody strives for.
How were men towards you? Were they welcoming to you? Was it tough to be a woman in a man's world?
Well, what was different back then is we still had a lot of World War II pilots, and most of them had never flown with a female pilot. So I would walk into many cockpits with American, and they were just astounded, but they were curious more than anything. I mean, I can't say they were, you know, rude to me or anything, but they were curious. Today, it would be very rare for a female pilot to walk into a cockpit with guys who have not at some stage in their career either had a female instructor or at least flown with female pilots. But it was very different back in the early days.
Yeah, it was more of a curiosity.
Yes. Yes, wow. We were oddities for sure. When we'd walk through the terminals, people would stare at us. They would whisper about us. And, you know, it was really just because they didn't know that female airline pilots existed.
Did you ever see little girls in the airports when you were on your way to a plane kind of look at you and just with wonder, like, oh, I could do that maybe?
Oh, without a doubt. And the best thing was when they would get on the airplane and they would look at the cockpit, and I always made a special effort to visit with them and just show them that we could do anything. And that happens frequently when I'm at the theater seeing Come From Away. When I walk outside after the show, there are so many young girls who will literally thank me for paving the way for them. And that really touches me more than anything.
But when you were doing that, when you were doing all the work to become a pilot and logging all those hours, were you thinking of yourself as blazing a trail or just doing what you wanted to do?
Doing what I wanted to do. You know, I was not an activist. I wasn't into women's lib or anything. I just wanted to fly airplanes. And I wanted to fly the biggest, fanciest airplanes there were. And that meant the airlines. And so I now realize that I was a pioneer and that I have paved the way. But back then, I wanted to pursue my passion, and that was flying jets.
And keeping your eye on the prize. Well, let's jump ahead to that day 16 years ago, September 11th, 2001. What do you remember about that day before you knew that history was happening?
Well, you know, I was flying from Paris to Dallas, Paris, France to Dallas, and we were over the middle of the North Atlantic when we got notification that one of the towers had been hit. And really, it wasn't until about 20 minutes later when the second tower was hit that the word terrorism was discussed over our aircraft radios. And, you know, they started closing all of the U.S. airspace, and we really thought we would divert into one of the larger cities like Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, or Calgary. And it wasn't our choice. We were ordered to land the airplane immediately in Gander, Newfoundland. And we're very familiar with Gander and St. John's because they are our en route alternates every time we fly a trip to Europe. However, most people will go their entire airline career and literally never land at any of those airports because we don't have that many in-flight emergencies today.
And they were just kind of the in case of emergency place to land if you had to.
Yes, yes. So we knew the names, but we didn't know much about the airports. But when we landed in Gander, in a three-hour period, we were 6,500 passengers and crew members. And, you know, they only have a population of 9,400 people, so we nearly doubled the size of the town in 3 hours.
Unbelievable. Let's take a listen to one of the ways that Come From Away tells your story through song. Here's the original cast recording of 38 Planes, where we can hear your character in the musical slowly understand what's happening on that fateful September day.
On final approach, we're coming into runway 22, and I think, where am I going to park this thing? There are planes lined up like sardines, and as far as I can see, there's cars lined up too. It looks like everybody in Newfoundland is here.
One plane, then another. Is this on? Sorry, 13. I'm new. This is Rogers TV, Channel 9. My name's Janice Mosher, and I'm reporting live from Gander Airport, where the 19th plane has just touched down. I'm here with
Bonnie Harris. On a normal day, we get a half dozen flights. Now, we already got three times that many landing in 2 hours. This is a lot of noise. You can smell the fuel. You can smell the trucks.
Jesus, that's a jumbo. There's got to be 250 or 300 on her. That's a fairly large one. There's got to be 200 on her. Now, I'm adding this up. We got 38 planes. We got 200-300 people on the average.
So what was happening for you as you were making that approach into the little town in Newfoundland?
Well, my approach was quite long. I was on a 95-mile final, which is unusual for us. Usually it's about 10 to 15 miles. But I had to jettison 7,000 pounds of fuel out over the North Atlantic. So I was number 36 out of 38 to land. And when we were on final, and I looked out the left and right side of the cockpit, and there were cars lined up as far as you could see. I literally thought everybody in Newfoundland had driven to the airport to see what was happening, because it was a major event for all of us and certainly for the folks of Newfoundland. And, you know, when I landed, airplanes were parked like sardines. I just couldn't even imagine where I was going to park, you know, my massive 777 at the time.
Yeah, that's a big plane with a lot of people on it. So the story is told in the play, but what was it like to be a resident of Gander at this unusual time? What did they tell you?
Well, you know, we were actually on our airplane for 28 hours because we were so late to land, and they deplaned you in order of arrival. So we didn't get off until the next day, and it was 28 hours. But the residents were just amazing. They delivered everything they could possibly manage to get to us: water bottles, Nutri-Grain bars, nicotine patches, diapers, formulas, everything you could think of. And then when we finally did deplane the next day on September 12th, I walked into the terminal, and it was lined with tables and tables of food. And since we deplaned at 7 in the morning, it made me realize that the residents had literally been up all night cooking for 7,000 passengers. I knew at that time that we had landed in a very special place.
So you had to stay on the plane on the tarmac for quite a while. What were the passengers like?
Actually, my passengers were great. I only had a problem with one lady, and she did cause quite a bit of problem, to the point where I had to bring in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And after, she claimed to be claustrophobic and wanted to sit in first class. So after they had a little chat with her and told her about the size the cell would be if they removed her from the airplane, she settled down and she behaved the rest of the time.
Wow. The
rest of the passengers were truly wonderful.
So she claimed to be claustrophobic, and then the police said, the cell you're going to be in is smaller than this plane.
Yes,
by
for sure.
Oh, wow. So you wrote in your journal that one of your fondest memories was a pair of senior ladies who gave you and your passengers an impromptu musical performance. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, we actually got a call to the airport that ended up being a false alarm, because they couldn't depart without everybody being there. If you came in with 156 passengers, you had to leave with 156 passengers. So we all go to the airport thinking we're going to leave, and they can't find some of the people, so they scrub the mission. So we're outside the terminal waiting for transportation back to the Comfort Inn, and these two elderly ladies walk over to us. They see us all in our uniforms and dressed up. And she had a duffel bag, and she pulled out an accordion and started playing God Bless America. And I'm going to tell you, my whole flight crew just stood there with tears running down their cheeks. Obviously, our emotions were quite raw anyway at the time, and that just capped it off. But it was just beautiful.
That is just incredible. And how they knew that on the accordion, no less.
I know, exactly. But music is a very big thing in Newfoundland. It's what they do during the cold winter months. Everybody plays various instruments, and they sing, and they dance, and they are a happy group of people.
So you were there for 5 days in Gander. So did you feel like you kind of became very familiar with the lifestyle and the type of people that are there in Gander?
Well, you know, I honestly was a bit sequestered to my motel because I never knew when I was going to get the call from American to go to the airport. So I have learned more about the people on my return trips, and certainly now with the musical Come From Away, I've learned more than I knew on that trip because I stayed very close to the motel. You know, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have pagers, we didn't have any way for them to contact me if I left. So it was really the passengers who interacted with the locals more than the flight crews did.
Yeah. Did you see any evolution over that the course of those 5 days with the people that were on your flight, the passengers? Did they kind of change or come around or make friends?
Oh, without a doubt, they have formed lifelong friendships, as have I. And, you know, one of the air traffic controllers who was responsible for my crew and my airplane, he and his wife have been to our home in Texas, Pat Woodford and Glenda Woodford, and they've stayed with us for 5 days. And I'm actually taking my family to Gander next month. And we already have so many things planned. We're going to the mayor's house for breakfast. He's going to make Towtons for us. We're going to Twillingate to see the icebergs. And I can hardly wait to take my children there. My husband has been, but not my children.
What a lifelong connection. I mean, that's just really incredible.
Oh, without a doubt. And the passengers, likewise, have made lifelong friends. And we still communicate. I still communicate with some of the passengers who were on my plane, and they were on subsequent flights of mine in later years with American.
And somebody got married? There was a marriage that sprang out of a couple who met during those 5 days?
Yes, Nick and Diane Marson. They were on the same airplane coming from Europe to Texas, and they met when they were passing out their prescriptions from the pharmacy, and they started dating, and he was from England, she was from Houston. He moved to Texas, he proposed, and they honeymooned in Newfoundland. It's all part of the play, and it's just a beautiful story, and they are also great friends of ours.
So back to the play, it opened in San Diego in 2015, but you say that you didn't even know about it until you saw it as an audience member.
That's right. I knew bits and pieces, of course, only through Facebook. I did an interview on the 10th anniversary with the playwrights when we all returned to Gander, and the interview was about 4 hours long. And then when we were invited to the world premiere in San Diego, we really didn't know what to expect. I had no idea that my role was so prominent in the show. And it is, of course, played by Jen Colella, who is a dear friend of mine. We met that first night before the opening, and we email, we text, we call each other. And, of course, she was nominated for a Tony Award, and it was her first nomination. So we have both shared that proud moment together.
That's pretty exciting. How accurate is the version of yourself that you saw in the play? Were all the facts correct? Did it seem like it was you up there?
Well, the facts are definitely correct. And, you know, the playwrights left Gander with 16,000 stories, so nothing had to be made up. It is all accurate. And when I watched Jen play my role, I think it touches me so profoundly because I feel like I am watching a younger version of myself. She acts like me. She talks like me. Her mannerisms are just like me. And she's beautiful. So I'm so honored to have her play my role.
So, I mean, the show has great music and all this positivity, but it's still about 9/11. How do you describe the show to people?
Well, and it is hard to describe, but what we often tell people is it's a 9/12 story. It is about the goodness and kindness and all the wonderful things that happened to us in the tiny town of Gander and the surrounding communities after the horrific attacks that occurred in our country. So a lot of people in the United States don't even know that that was happening to us. So there were beautiful stories that were being made just north of the border while our country was suffering through the most horrific historical event in our lifetime.
I do remember hearing those news reports about the town of Gander, and it really became something better to focus on after the fact.
Absolutely. And Tom Brokaw did a beautiful story called Operation Yellow Ribbon. It was a documentary that aired during the Vancouver Olympics, and it tells the beautiful story of the people of Gander.
So you've seen this show more than 70 times now. Are there any particular performances that really stand out for you?
Well, actually, the first one was the hardest one for me to get through, because within 5 minutes, when Jen calls my husband on the phone, we both broke down and our heads were buried in our hands. So we missed about 75% of the first show. And I would say it took us about 15 to 20 shows before we could get through it without crying, because it's just so emotional. And now that I've seen it 72 times, I love seeing it with people who have never seen it before. And, you know, every scene, every word takes on such a special meaning when I'm seeing, for example, a couple of nights ago, we saw it with 80 American Airlines executives, including Doug Parker, the CEO of American Airlines, and, you know, the chief pilots. And that was an incredibly special evening for me to see it with them.
What kind of responses did they have?
Oh, it was fabulous, because American is so beautifully represented throughout the show. And today, when the airlines get a lot of bad publicity, it seems, it honored American in such a nice way. And I know that it made them so proud. And it's, you know, throughout the show, American is recognized. And it made me very proud. It really did.
So you were just recently in New York City, as you just mentioned, and you went to the Tonys. Tell me about that.
Oh, goodness. A once-in-a-lifetime experience for us, for sure, because before Come From Away, we weren't theater geeks. I mean, we've certainly been to some of the big shows on Broadway, but, you know, it's not like we know a whole lot about the theater world. And what an experience. It was a true red carpet. The whole block was marked off. There must have been 1,000 photographers there. And, you know, there were movie stars and theater stars, and it was a whole new world for us. But what an experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it was just such a gift that Christopher Ashley, the director of Come From Away, received the Tony for Best Director. It was just wonderful.
What a celebration. How much went into getting ready to go to that? I mean, have you been on a lot of red carpets?
Well, no, only 2 times, the opening of the Broadway show on March 12th. And what was so special about that is some of my best girlfriends from Fort Myers were able to join me for that. And my dear friend, lifelong friend, Laurie Harrelson, and Tisha Lestorti, Terry Curtis, and Norma Lyons were all able to come up and share part of that weekend with us. And it just meant so much to me, because they followed the show. They've been to various cities to see it. And it just was such a gift. And so it's been quite an experience, and has literally consumed our life for the last 2 years.
Well, it's so interesting. It's great that you get to say, well, I've only been on 2 red carpets so far.
I know. Who
so
would have
far.
Ever thought? And, you know, I often say, when we left Gander on September 15th, it was a very rainy Saturday morning. And if somebody had come to me and said, you know, in about 15 years, you're going to be seeing this show on Broadway.
And you're going to be portrayed as a... And the woman who portrays you is going to get her first Tony nomination.
Yes, I would have been speechless. I would have thought they were crazy. So it has been an amazing gift. And Irene Sankoff and David Hine, who wrote the show, are just masters at their craft. And they should be so rewarded for that.
Well, that's a really interesting story. I really hope that someday I get to go see that show, too.
Well, I hope you do, too. I hope just the music alone has sparked your interest.
The music's great, and I love your character.
Yes, we all do.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank our guest, Beverly Bass, and thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. And Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1. WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM. NPR for Southwest Florida.
Welcome to the trees, a kiss and a card and whatever's in between. To the ones who've left, you're never truly gone. A candle's in the window and the candle's always on. To the coals and the caves and the people from the plains.
5 days,
19 animals,
and 7,000 strays.
When the sun is setting and it's darker than before, if you're hoping for a hybrid, then you'll find